You're listening to Kazoo Podcast number 4. I've got some great music to play for you on this episode and in a very exciting interview with John Boyle from the Nihilist Spasm Band, who we're really excited to have at the festival this year. The Nihilist Spasm Band has been, they're nearly coming up on their 50th anniversary. This is their 49th year as an active noise band, starting in 1965, playing Monday nights in London, Ontario. And they were very strict to their regional area, and we're going to talk to them about all the things that have happened with their storied career, which will certainly be an interesting portion of the podcast, so stay tuned for that. Now I'm going to get things started with a song by Jeff Barbara. This is Wild Boys.
Oh, feeling. Oh, this well runs deep.
Listening to Kazoo Podcast number 4. If you want to find out information about the festival, you can find it on the website www.kazoo.ca. I suspect you've already found that website if you're listening to this podcast. All the information about accessibility for venues and all the details about all the extra things outside of the music events that are happening at the festival, because Kazoo is much more than just a music festival. There's a lot of visual art and multimedia installations happening, and of course the Kazoo Print Expo, which is one of my favorite parts of the festival. Now I'm going to play a song for you, an alternate version of a song by Noah23, who's playing with Vic NS at Sapphire. This is an alternate version of the song Nuts. It's the demo fuzz mix. This song features Liz Powell from Land of Talk. Here it is on Kazoo Podcast number 4.
There is only one poet. My heart is a statue. Halcyon in the winter now. Solstice, black hole, vacuum coming down. Cashew, walnuts, hazels and almonds. Golden nuts on the microphone. I'm a problem and the equation all at the same time. Halcyon in the winter now. Solstice, black hole, vacuum coming.
Slightly awkward because usually like one person goes woo. You guys actually know. I don't know what's wrong with that question. Why can't people just be doing well? Well, anyways, this song is by the Guess Who. I guess I'm gonna say who they're each by if they're all covers. And I have a bit of an obsession with Randy Bachman. Otis was due on Randy Bachman's birthday, which is the day before my birthday. And I tried to get him to be on I have a children's album back there. And I tried to get Randy Bachman to perform with me, but he was too busy. But one of these days, this is dedicated to Randy Bachman's absence. Long to hold you again. You. This is where Randy Bachman was solo once he realized he really liked me. But it hasn't come to that yet. He did like the song. He said it sounded like Feist.
Hello, John Boyle. Are you there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining me on Kazoo Podcast number 4. It's an honor to have you on our program.
So it's great to be here.
Are you in your hometown of London right now, I presume?
No, I'm living in Peterborough. Most of the band live in London, but I live in Peterborough, and Ionishi lives in Peterborough as well.
All right, so you both are joining us on the interview today, which is very exciting. We've got lots to talk about. I've known about your band for a really long time, surprisingly, because Bill Exley was a teacher at my high school.
Oh, really? We almost never play anywhere in Canada or abroad where someone doesn't show up in the audience who is a former student of Bill Exley's.
This
is amazing.
That's just an ongoing thing that you guys have been dealing with for a long time now.
Yes, in New York City, in Paris, and just about everywhere we played.
Well, I'll never forget the day that I was catching the bus. I lived in a rural part outside of Elmira. And the kid that I was catching the bus with, he was a really big fan of Sonic Youth. And of course, Thurston Moore has been obsessed and worships you guys basically for a long time now. And so he was asking about, do you know about the Nihilist Spasm Band? Did you know that there's one of the members has been a teacher at our school? I was confused. I didn't know what he was talking about. Of course, at the time, I was in grade 9. I barely knew anything about music outside of what was on the radio at that time. And then, so actually, the Nihilist Spasm Band was one of my first introductions into what is available in the world of sounds outside of typical music. So I want to thank you for that.
Right. You're welcome. It's we've been called a lot of things over the years, proto-punk and whatever, and then noise band music came along in the late 80s and in the 90s, and then we got labeled a noise band. So I don't know what we are, but we're definitely outside of conventional music.
And you guys have been going since 1965 now.
That's right, 49 years, so we're... looking forward to next year, which will be the big 5-0, and then who knows what will happen after that.
Do you have anything special planned for the 50th anniversary?
Not really. Just we'll play in London, and we're getting too old and crotchety to do international tours. So I don't know what we'll do. Although it's possible someone might just invite us out of the blue to go and play somewhere, which happened this year, actually. We're invited to play in Brno in the Czech Republic at a festival of old noise musicians. So we'll be there with a bunch of old people from other countries in Europe. The only one I know personally was Milan Knežák, who's a Czech Fluxus artist primarily, and I had met him back in the early 70s. But anyway, that'll be fun. And we got invited to play in Prague as well. This is next fall. And in Cologne in Germany. So it'll be a little mini tour, which is about the kind of tour we can handle.
Well, that all sounds very exciting. Mm. You guys have developed quite a bit of notoriety outside of your home country of Canada. How did that all get started? Where did it start?
We don't really know. Somehow or other, we've released or were asked to make a record. The first one was for Arts Canada, which was the biggest art magazine in the country back in the 60s, and we made a flexi disc for that magazine, and it was recorded at a radio station in St. Thomas, and that somehow copies of those things get out to people here and there, and somebody hears about us, and then next thing you know, a few years later, we get asked to make a record for someone, and we were asked by Allied Records in 1969, I think it was, or 70 maybe, Toronto Record Company, and we made a record called No Record, and copies of this record leaked out to people here and there, and then we were asked to make a record for the Music Gallery in Toronto in the mid-70s, and then a request came out of the blue to make a record for an English label, United Dairies. So they made one. And then in the early 90s, we got word that a copy of our Music Gallery record, vinyl, had found its way into the hands of a Japanese a sort of noise musician, experimental rock, whatever musician, Jojo Hiroshiga. And he ran a little record company called Allied Records. And so he wrote a letter by snail mail to the mailing address on the vinyl that we had published. And so we replied, and one thing led to another, and he put us on a compilation disc with various people from around the world, including Nurse with Wound from the States, and various others, and then we made a CD with Alchemy in Japan, recorded it in London, Ontario, and then they invited us to come and tour in Japan. And so they set up a tour for us, and in 1996, I think it was. So, you know, it just goes on like this. People who love weird stuff, especially with the Internet now, they find it. And if they have any way of getting access to it, they'll dream up ways. And so we get these contacts. From people, so I don't know what it is, but there is an international community of experimental, wacky noise sound musicians, and they all know about each other. And whenever somebody tours, there's always a bunch of these people who show up, in no matter what country, no matter what city, and they know about you. So that's. How it goes, and Thurston heard about us. I don't know. I actually met him a number of times. We played with them a number of times, but I never asked him exactly how he heard about us the first time.
He is really into that kind of stuff, so he was probably in some record shop talking to some some record nerds that just knew about the right kind of stuff or something, I imagine.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He every place he goes to, he goes out to the local stores and he looks up local bands too, and he's very interested in them. He sort of has a list of favorites, and whoever he's in contact with, he pushes them.
He still seems to carry the independent spirit very close to his heart.
Yes. So, Lee Ronaldo as well in Sonic Youth is a similar kind of guy. Well, they're very different individuals, but he has these interests as well. And we played with him on a number of occasions.
We were lucky Lee Ronaldo played in Guelph this past summer, actually.
Oh, yeah. Was that at the Jazz Festival?
That was actually at Hillside.
Right, yeah. He's very active around the world.
So all of those records that you were mentioning there, it seems as though people can order them on your website. Is that correct? Certain ones.
On our website, we do have a few, but most of the old editions, they were all very small. Usually 1,000 copies was the maximum, and they've all sold out. But there is a guy who's linked through our website in London, Ontario, who gets facsimiles made of the records.
Okay.
And sends them out on CDs. So they're not on vinyl. But everything can be ordered through him as a facsimile of the original records. But it's not actually one of the original edition that people get.
Of course. But that's great that they're still available in some form.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And people can find that on your website, is the www.3simpatico.ca Pratton NSB. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
And people
even if they forget and just Google Nihilist Spasm Band, it'll lead them to our website.
Yes. And there's lots of information about you guys on there and ways to find your records. So you have been based, you're in Peterborough, but you've been based out of London basically for this whole time. You historically have a stance against a sort of anti-American and anti-Toronto stance. You're very, very focused on regionalism. And I was reading in the book by Greg Curnow's sister. She said something about his dad. Their dad used to turn down offers to go to Toronto to have a bigger career and move out of his town. But he really thought it was important to stay there. And she seemed to think that maybe Greg had gotten that mentality from that attitude. Do you think that that's true at all, or because you guys seem to really focus on staying where you are and not worrying too much about the world outside of that?
Yeah, we're all quite different individuals. Three of us were visual artists: Greg Curnow, myself, and Murray Favreau. And Murray is a really, really prominent sculptor nationally and internationally. He doesn't feel that way at all about Canadian nationalism. But I do. I shared that with Greg, and we would always talk about that kind of thing whenever I would go down to London. I was born in London, grew up there, but I moved away to teach school when I was 20, and have never moved back since, except for 1 year to go to university. But I keep going back to London regularly, and I've played with the band all through those years. So, but I feel that way. Greg was even more committed to the. He was basically anti-American, and it was going to the States that put him off the most, and he did turn down some offers of exhibitions and dealers and whatnot in the United States. But he was not against going to other countries, and did go from time to time. And I shared his anti-Americanism, but a little less rigidly, I think. I have done things in the States. In fact, after Greg died, the band played in the States a number of times. But we're probably not going to go back there again.
Something happened. I remember reading in that book, something happened on his first trip to New York, something happened at a gallery there. Don't remember exactly what it was.
I can't really speak for Greg, of course, but my recollection was that he was visiting a friend, a Canadian artist, Les Levine, in New York while he was there. And I remember he said something about some sort of violent incident in the street where some young thugs challenged them to a fight when they were walking along, and then it looked, you know, they were outnumbered, and it looked as though it could be violent and bloody, and they ran, and one of these guys threw a bottle after them and hit Les in the back of the neck, cutting him for some stitches, and this kind of I remember shook him up. But I doubt that it was only that. You know, I think his attitudes evolved over the years, as mine did. So, but the band itself, I don't think we could say that thinking applies to everybody at all. In fact, I may be the only remaining one who thinks that way.
Who holds that attitude. So you play... Is the Monday night thing still happening?
Yes, it happens most Monday nights in London at the Forest City Gallery. I haven't been able to make it down. I've been less and less, unfortunately, the last couple of years. But there are at least three members who show up every Monday night. I think three is the quorum, and if there aren't three people in town ready to play, then they don't play. So I can't promise that if people go to London on a Monday night, the band will be playing, but most Monday nights.
That's kind of an overwhelming legacy to have upheld that tradition for so long now.
That's right, because there was little encouragement. There was curiosity right from the beginning because we were so weird. And there was literally nobody doing what we were doing. The closest thing to us was free jazz that was happening in the States at the time, where jazz musicians who were, unlike us, they were highly skilled and trained and polished musicians, and they were trying to break out from their musical constraints. And including getting, dropping rhythm, steady rhythm, and melody, and just sort of wailing away on their instruments for as long as they mood held them. And but usually they would start with a musical signature and return to it eventually after all of this free stuff. But we were not musicians and had no musical skills. We built our own instruments, and they couldn't be played, many of them, in regular musical ways. And we weren't trying to make music, so we just sort of evolved a way of honking and squawking and wailing on our instruments. And knowing or relating to what other people were doing and finding patterns and rhythms that that we enjoyed, and somehow understanding when we did well and when we didn't. So it's kind of our own music, a folk music, I guess you could call it, that we've invented and evolved.
And do you think that, so you have evolved over time, do you think? Has your sound progressed, or has it stayed sort of similar to how it began?
It's progressed. It changes because people keep changing the instruments. Art Pratton is an outstanding instrument builder. And he can't seem to play an instrument for more than 2 or 3 months, and when he feels the itch to build a new one, and that changes the sound, and he gets new effects, and that changes the sound. Murray Favreau builds guitars, and because he's a sculptor, people buy them as artworks, and so he most of the time plays on a modified regular guitar, but people change things all the time, get new mics or get something new, and or just get some new inspiration, or Bill, the singer, will be upset about something and get ranting about it and while playing with the band, and this will get everybody shifting a little bit. But our basic approach hasn't changed, and that's just to improvise from start to finish, and improvise together, so that we keep developing our way of our language, I guess, our musical language that we all understand, or at least intuit. And so it's like most things, really. Nothing is as linear as, you know, what art schools teach about one form of art leading to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. It's mostly just people working for their life, and everything moving and shifting and evolving around during their life, not necessarily toward a point of perfection or anything, but just staying interesting.
And you guys definitely have managed to do that. Speaking of instruments, do you think the most famous instrument, I know Art Pratton, you said he builds all these instruments. There is one that's sort of notorious that he has called the Prativarius, is that correct?
Yeah, which is basically a violin-like instrument that he builds. And he has many versions of these Prativarius. It's just a sort of humorous name he's given to it. We started as a kazoo band, but now just Aya and I are the last remaining kazoo players in the band. So,
how do you feel about playing a festival that's called Kazoo Fest?
Well, that's great. I think it's terrific, especially since you informed me that there's never been a kazoo band playing there before.
No, the original name of the festival had nothing to do with people actually playing kazoos, so I think it's neat that there's finally a band that does play kazoos.
Right. Well, we'll be there with our kazoos.
We're running out of time here, but what have been some of the career highlights for your band over the many years now? I know that's kind of a broad question, but if there was a couple points that you wanted to mention...
Well, the Japanese thing was a big highlight. In fact, that's where we met Aya. She was working for the record company and helped to organize our first tour there, as well as bring out our record. And her own band, Sekiri, was we played with them on one of the tours, but. She eventually moved to Canada and hooked up with us. So, but that was a highlight. And meeting Thurston and Lee was a big thing, and it was a lot of fun. Going to a number of the places we played in Europe, personally, I find to be highlights, because we meet people we would never otherwise meet, and just have a fantastic time playing and playing with them, and watching them play, and seeing a new place. And that'll be the case with this tour next October.
So with the type of band that you have, you've probably had some extreme reactions, both positive and negative. What have been some of the most extreme reactions that you've had after performing?
Well, initially it was totally negative. People would attempt to boo us, but of course they couldn't be heard over the racket of the band. But on a couple of occasions they've tried throwing things. In fact, we played at Guelph way back when. I think in the early 70s. And the auditorium filled up and at the university. And the minute we started playing, people started leaving. And within five or six minutes, I think there were a half dozen people left in the in the hall. So that kind of thing used to happen. It doesn't happen so much anymore.
I don't think that will happen at Kazoo Fest. I can safely say that.
Yeah. And we've also had, well, my favorite contrast was playing at McMaster University in the late 60s. Two concerts the same night, and the first one was just like the Guelph one, where everybody left, and I was a few minutes late, and there were only a couple of friends who had come from London left in the audience. But then it filled up again for the second concert, and Bill had the idea of having a snowball dance, or somebody did, and he yelled snowball, and our friends had started dancing and then ran and grabbed a couple of people from the audience before they could escape. And then within a few minutes, everyone was dancing, and they all stayed and cheered and wanted encores and had a wonderful time. Same room, same kind of audience, but a little linkage trick of having a dance.
Well,
so it's, that was interesting.
That was a good strategy, sounds like. Speaking of Bill Exley, we're almost out of time here, but do you think that the persona that he's developed, he has as being super serious but also silly and absurd at the same time, do you think that was just an extension of his pre-existing personality, or do you think he kind of created that to fit the mood of your band?
Well, I think that Bill is the genuine article. Most of the students that we meet on the tours tell us that he was the same in their classroom. Although, I mean, he didn't bellow and whatever the way he does with the band, but that the personality thing is the same, and I'm convinced of that. So he's genuine. He may try to have a certain effect on people often, but most people can see that it's just Bill, and so he's for real.
All right, we're out of time here. Maybe I'll just say a quick thing to get Aya on the. Are you there, Aya?
I'm here. Yeah. Yes, I'm here.
How do you like playing with the Nihilist Spasm Band?
It's always fun. I can find something new every time I play with them, and I've just enjoying playing with them. So it's always fun.
Well, we're excited to have you joining them when you come to Guelph to play Kazoo Fest.
Thank you very much. We're looking forward to playing there.
All right. I'll talk to you guys when you're here. And thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. We're going to leave the listeners here with the song Destroy the Nations from the very first record, No Record.
America! Fire! Destroy!